you want something more? I mean, more meaningful moments, opportunities, deeper relationships, and memorable experiences. Do you want to make a difference? If you said yes to any of that, a career in real estate could be the opportunity you're looking for. Guiding people through one of the most important decisions they ever make, the purchase or sale of their home, could be both rewarding and lucrative for you. Exit Realty's revolutionary compensation model, training, and technology provide you with the tools and resources you need to start and build your successful real estate career. Call Exit Realty Low Country Group today at 843-619-3005. That is 843-619-3005, or visit join.exitlowcountry.com and make your exit today.
Good morning, and welcome to another episode of Exit Strategies Radio Show. I am your host, Colwyn J. Millett, broker and owner of Exit Realty Low Country Group in beautiful North Charleston, South Carolina. If this is your first time listening to this show, you, sir or ma'am, are in for a treat, because our mission here is very simple. That is to empower our community through financial literacy and real estate education. We're legacy building. That is what we do. So if you're out there making things happen with your family for the generations yet to come, you know, our word teaches us to leave a legacy, to leave an inheritance for our children, our children's children, and so forth and so on. We want you to put a hashtag on that thing that says that you are legacy building, because that is what you are doing. You can find us on Facebook, YouTube, Anchor FM. You can also find us on Instagram at our website, ExitStrategiesRadioShow.com. You can catch us in a number of different places on your favorite podcast applications. We appreciate you listening. Please share this content with your friends, your family, your coworkers, even those in your groups, your church groups, etc., guys, because sometimes the message and the word that we are speaking here today is for you. Sometimes it is for someone else that you know. Again, we appreciate you listening. Let's get started.
Good morning, good morning, and great morning, guys. Welcome to another fabulous episode of Exit Strategies Radio Show. Hey, I'm your host, Colwyn J. Millett, broker and owner of Exit Realty Low Country Group in beautiful North Charleston, South Carolina. Hey, if this is your first time listening to this show, you, sir or ma'am, are in for a treat, because our mission here is very simple. That is to empower our community through financial literacy and real estate education, guys. We are legacy building. That is what we do. Look, we have continued up this mountain. We are still yet climbing. We are still yet, as we are going up, if you will, and I'll call this real estate mountain. That's what we're climbing. We're climbing real estate mountain. And as we have been ascending this terrain, we have encountered some of the most awesome people. And today, we are very fortunate to have encountered along our journey none other than Kevin Bupp. He is the CEO. So look, he already up the mountain, y'all. He is the CEO of Sunrise Capital Investors. And he is going to share with us today. Look, I'm going to tell you right now, we've been sitting up here like, you know, he's a Sherpa. He guides people. And we've been sitting here talking about this terrain that is yet to come. And he has some insights and some strategies to help you navigate your real estate mountain in a whole nother fashion and help accelerate your growth, help accelerate your development. So I want you to start, first of all, by grabbing a notepad, pencil, pen, whatever it is. And I need you to get your right hand ready and start scribbling, because we're going to have a good time. Kevin, how are you doing today?
Corwin, I mean, I'm good, buddy. I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us today. So, Kevin, if you don't mind, give our listeners like the high level overview of who you are and what you do.
Sure, will do. And I'll try to keep it short. So, as you mentioned, I am the CEO and founder of Sunrise Capital Investors. We're a boutique real estate private equity fund that specializes in manufactured housing and parking investments. So parking investments meaning surface parking lots and also structured parking garages and in very strategic locations. So we've got about 150 million assets under management. And in a little background on myself, I've been doing this now, just real estate in general, for over 20 years. So 2+ decades. Got started when I was 19, bought my first property when I was 20, single family property. In my early 20s, built up quite a significant portfolio of single family homes, rentals, and just an investment portfolio. And then transitioned along that journey into larger commercial assets. I've owned pretty much everything at this point in time. I've owned self-storage, office, retail, industrial properties, medical office, the list goes on, and really landed on the two assets that we specialize in and focus our time in today, manufactured housing about 11 years ago, and then parking about 4 years ago. So those are where we tunnel our vision. That's where we spend all of our energy and our resources. But again, I've owned just about everything and I've experienced the ups and downs. I went through 08 and lost pretty much my entire fortune back then and rebuilt it again. And here we are today.
So Kevin, I'll say this, and it's funny, because a lot of times people don't understand, like, real estate is so broad. Like, we always make it this one little thing. We make it single family residences, but you're investing in parking lots. I mean, and so cars are your tenants.
That's right.
That's funny. That is hilarious. So you say you've owned pretty much everything. I want this conversation, if we can today, to kind of touch on like where you like to specialize in. You've kind of nestled, you said, between essentially two sectors, one, residences, you know, mobile home parks, and then parking. So what have you found with maybe those two sectors that was most attractive to you? And why are you there now? Is that a natural progression, or is this just something that is on your path to maybe other type of specialties?
Yeah, that's a great question. Backing up, I guess, back to about 2011 is when I was introduced to mobile home parks or manufactured housing. And it was an asset class, just like a lot of folks, like you might have driven past them. They might have been in the town you grew up in, but someone owns that, but it never really fit the standard investment class. Like, it didn't fall in the same realm of like owning a single family rental, or someone owns an office building, someone owns a shopping center. Like, mobile home parks is kind of like were the anomaly. And I never had considered it either, but it was brought to my attention by another real estate investor, and it piqued my interest. And I've always been a contrarian investor. I like to go the opposite direction of the herd. I like to find fragmented niches to where I can exploit and create opportunity. I always consider myself an opportunistic investor. If you're following the herd, more than likely you're paying retail pricing for things, not as much margin when there's a lot of additional competition in the same space fighting for the same deals. And so manufactured housing became that like 11 years ago for us. Now it's much of a known asset class. It's definitely not a secret anymore, but it very much was back then. If you knew, you knew. And if you didn't, you didn't. That's what I found. It was a mom and pop industry, very fragmented. So there were very few large professional investors like ourselves in that space. There were a few, but it was, for the most part, the majority of the mobile home parks throughout the country were owned by an individual. A lot of times the original owner that developed it 40, 50 years ago, maybe a second generation owner, but just a very fragmented niche. And so I like that. I like that for that reason, but I also liked it because there wasn't as much competition. And then the big reason why I absolutely fell in love with it is it's got massive barriers to entry. And so it's very difficult to get a new mobile home park built today for a litany of reasons, but municipalities, I'll keep it simple, municipalities do not like them. It's the only asset class that actually has a diminishing supply, meaning that there's more mobile home parks getting redeveloped or torn down or shut down every year than new supply coming on the market. And so for that reason, we're fairly isolated. When we buy a mobile home park in a fantastic market, we don't have to worry about someone building another one right down the road from us. So like, whereas in an apartment complex, they're going up everywhere. Self-storage, they're going up everywhere. Car washes, they're going up everywhere. And it's really a race to who can get the best location and essentially kind of get their foothold in the marketplace. And the who comes in last typically loses, right? Or the who gets the, you know, inferior location typically loses. Like right now, there's a lot of new builds, a lot of new apartment builds, a lot of things that were planned 3 years ago that are coming out of the ground. Well, absorption has slowed a great deal. Rent growth has slowed a great deal to what it was a couple of years ago. And so these developers that might be 12 months out from bringing, you know, 400 new units online in an area where there's already 10,000 more coming online over the next like 2 years, they might find themselves in a challenging position. There's not as much demand for that product by the time they bring it out. So we don't have to worry about that with mobile home parks. So that was a big thing. And what we found with parking is that there was a lot of similar qualities with it. When we were introduced to that space about 5 years ago, we didn't start buying it till about 3.5 years ago, but introduced that space, it had a lot of similarities. For the most part, it's a diminishing supply. A lot of major cities across the U.S. have completely removed the parking requirements for any new developments being built. That means that as surface lots get redeveloped, developers are only putting enough parking in for what they need. They're not required now like they used to be to put in X number of spaces per 1,000 square feet, which created a surplus of parking in a lot of major cities across the U.S. Well, that surplus is going away and there's no new parking coming back in to replace it. And we still need parking. So we like that asset class for that reason, amongst others. And again, it's a very fragmented space, not a lot of other folks in it. I literally, before we started buying it, I didn't know anyone else that owned parking assets. So again, just a couple of reasons why we love the two asset classes. I've got money invested in a lot of other places, multifamily, self-storage, medical office is a big one. But where we spend our time as a company, our core focus and competency are just manufactured housing and parking.
That's interesting. What you touched on is so true. A lot of mobile home parks, especially in larger metros as development has kind of reached them. I can think of several neighborhoods in the area that I primarily serve that have now become housing development, have become subdivisions now, because you already had all the infrastructure in. You had the road in, you had the water, you had the sewer, you had everything that you needed to have in. And now all of a sudden, developers looking at that and saying, hey, well, everything is already here. We get rid of mobile homes. We can go ahead and start putting and building houses here. Mm-hmm. And then we're golden. That's what's happened. So you have a tremendous amount of development that has happened, or redevelopment, if you will, of mobile home parks. And like you said, people aren't coming and putting them in as often as they used to, if you will. So with that, I completely get it. And the parking piece, we are observing that as well in some of the markets that I serve, that parking lots are prime locations. Some of them are downtown. Mm-hmm. They've been in lots, right, for redevelopment. We're in a gig economy, people. Some people don't even own cars anymore. So do you need a parking lot downtown, or can you just have people take public transportation into these areas that parking is so limited or otherwise a desirable area to redevelop? Mm-hmm. So that makes perfect sense. So Kevin, what gave you the bug with real estate? You started doing this, you said at age 19. Mm-hmm. What gave you the bug?
Yeah, that's a great question. I wish I had this amazing story of how I picked up a book, The Library, and just fell in love with it. But ultimately, I always joke and say that real estate kind of found me. It was at a point in my life, I was going to community college, I was tending bar in the evening. And ever since the age of 12, I've been doing side hustles. I had a paper route. I taught myself how to install amplifiers, head units into my brother's friend's cars because they were a driving age. And so I always did something to make money, mowing grass, shoveling snow, all that stuff. And I always wanted to make my own way. And I was never afraid of hard work. But I wouldn't say I was all that academically talented. I didn't really enjoy traditional school. And so when I graduated, instead of going away like a lot of my friends did, I just went to local community college. I didn't want to spend my parents' money and then, ultimately waste it away. And that's kind of what I felt I would have done if I would have gone away to university. And so I stayed local, again, tended bar in the evenings, went to school during the day. And about that time, and this is 19, so I was a freshman, a girl was dating, her mother started dating a new guy. And this guy named David, he was a local real estate investor. And I just befriended him. And, he was about 25 years older than I. He was a local guy, owned a number of single family rentals and small multifamily rentals. And just lived a very different lifestyle than what I lived growing up. It seemed to have a lot of flexibility. He seemed to be around during the daytime a lot of times, which my parents were at work, right? Both my parents worked full-time jobs and just had a different swagger to him, again, than what I had been accustomed to growing up. And I grew up in a very middle-of-the-road, blue-collar family. Never went without. Went on one family vacation a year. So we didn't go without, but it just seemed very different. He had a lot of flexibility, which I liked. And so after befriended David, he about 4 or 5 months after I knew him, he invited me to a real estate conference, which I knew, again, I had never read a book. I didn't even fully comprehend what it was he did. Like I understood he owned real estate and tenants paid him rent. But like other than that, as far as like the financing and the arbitrage between your monthly payment versus what you're renting it for and getting your residents to pay down your mortgage payments and all that jazz, right? I didn't comprehend it yet. And so, but he invited me to this 3-day real estate conference down in Philadelphia. And I still don't know why. I never asked him why he invited me, because I didn't know anything. I wasn't going to bring any value to the equation other than we were kind of became friends. So I went and I was overwhelmed in a very positive way. I met a lot of people that in my mind were doing big things. They were doing a couple flips a year, making 10, 15, 20 grand on a wholesale, or maybe 40 or 50 grand on a fix and flip. And that was just an exorbitant amount of money for me to think that one small transaction on a wholesale that you didn't even own the property, you made $7,000 to $10,000. Like that just that blew my mind. And it excited me enough that when I got home, I was ready to dive in, but I didn't know where to start. I was overwhelmed. Like, kind of like, where do I start now? Like, I don't want to lose this energy or this excitement. And that's when I went to David, because I knew that if I waited a couple months and tried to like, I'd spin my wheels and then I would lose interest and I'd go back to doing the same thing I was doing and not really making any headway in life. And I went to David and basically said, hey, I want to learn more. I want to be around you more during the day when you're working. What can I do to help you in your business? And I had observed him a little bit, and being that he was like 25 years old and he wasn't all that great with technology. I watched him struggle one day making a PowerPoint, very basic PowerPoint presentation for one of his private investors on a new deal he was buying. And it took him 10 times the amount of time it should have taken him to do it. It was really simple. And so I knew that I could at least add value there from that standpoint. But what ended up happening, I ended up working with him as for free, as call an executive assistant, call whatever you want. I did anything. I'd drop off leases. I would meet contractors. I would go to Home Depot and pick up supplies and drop them off at a property. And I would do everything and anything. I did it for about 14 months. Through osmosis, I learned a ton of how he talked to people, the questions he asked, what was seemingly important to him, and all those nuances that exist in owning rental real estate. And it took me about a year and a half. I bought my first property when I was 20, and that was the start of it all. So, but David was my mentor and wouldn't be where I'm at today if it wasn't for meeting him. And he became the foundation of what I've built today. So very grateful for that.
That is awesome. That is what it takes, Kevin. As you were talking, I was listening to what you want, what you was not saying. With the things you were not saying were you had to be willing. So you had to be willing to do what was necessary in order for you to learn. You had to shadow, you had to follow. Everybody wants you to tell them, go do this and you'll make a bunch of money, when it's really not go do this, because you may not be able to do it that way. Watch what I do so you can learn how you can do and accomplish it yourself. So that's what I heard. And that is something that I share often. I share often with the people that are around me, spend time with, sit at the foot or the feet of those who are doing it, so that you mm-hmm. can go to them what it is that you need to know so that you can do similar, same, or greater. So thank you so much for sharing that. I know you've kind of, again, settled in on your current niches. What were the pitfalls that you experienced in dealing with single family, with the people that are around me, spend time with, sit at the foot or the feet of those who are doing it so that mm-hmm. you can go to them what it is that you need to know so that you can do similar, same, or greater. So thank you so much for sharing that. So I know you've kind of, again, settled in on your current, if you will, your niches. What were the pitfalls that you experienced in dealing with single family, detached versus some of the other asset classes, mm-hmm. or any, what are the pitfalls or any others that were greater than what you're experiencing now?
Yeah, and that's a very good question. I don't know if it's necessarily pitfalls, but when I was in my early 20s, I wasn't married. I didn't have kids. And so all I had time to do was work. And I really enjoyed what I did. And by my mid-20s, I had built up
any others that were greater than what you're experiencing now?
Yeah, and that's a very good question. I don't know if it's necessarily pitfalls, but when I was in my early 20s, I wasn't married. I didn't have kids. And so all I had time to do was work, right? And I really enjoyed what I did. And by single family home portfolio of 122 homes spread out amongst five different counties here in Florida. I would say that looking back, reflecting back, which I did a lot of after I lost pretty much everything in 08, and Florida was a very different economy back then. It was heavily reliant on construction. And when 08 happened, construction stopped and people moved away. There was a lot of a surplus of homes and apartments that took years to get absorbed. And so with all that being said, reflecting back outside of that, homes and apartments that took years to get absorbed. And so with all that being said, reflecting back outside of that, just being reliant at that point in time on a local economy that was heavily reliant upon kind of one job base, that was risky in and of itself. But the bigger lesson I learned, I think, were some of the inefficiencies I think that existed with managing that many rooftops spread out amongst five different counties between contractors, repairs and maintenance, turnovers, leasing. And, you know, today you can manage that portfolio a lot more efficiently just with technology. Where technology has come, it's literally night and day difference of what you can do. Just think about remote lockboxes, things like that, cameras that didn't really exist back then. And so, again, a lot of those efficiencies have gone away for the most part. But what I really realized was the inefficiency of my time. And I only realized that after I lost everything and going back to rebuild, I'd spent so many hours and so many years building that portfolio of 122 properties. And I did own some apartment complexes before 08. I owned some smaller stuff, like 24 units. The biggest one I had was a 72 unit. So I did understand like kind of the scale. And looking back, I'm like, well, heck, I own more units of apartments and it took way less time for me to buy that. And they were way more efficient to operate than the 122 that I bought. And so going back to rebuild, I was like, there's no way I'm going to spend my time. Number one, I had a wife at that point going back to rebuild and we were planning to have children. I'm like, okay, well, I don't really have an interest now in hustling at this for 80 hours a week. I'd like to create some life work balance, as we call it. And so it was going to be apartments. At that point, apartments was the way that was the vehicle that was going to get me there. And again, during that kind of part of my journey, when I was looking to rebuild and figuring out which vehicle was going to help me get there, I was introduced to mobile home parks. And so instead of apartments, I decided on mobile home parks. I bought my first one back in 2011, and that went well. Bought the second, the third, fourth, and now we've owned mobile home parks in 16 different states, and it's been a great ride. So with that, it's more efficient. You know, simple answer to your question, I feel that it's much more efficient to build a real cash flowing portfolio. And don't get me wrong, it depends on what your plan is. For me, the plan need to be build a large enough portfolio to have a sustainable income for myself, for my family. Like, and it's hard to do that. Like, I didn't have a W-2. I've never had a real job per se. This is my job. And so to go buy just a few single family home here, single family home there that produces a couple hundred bucks a month in cash flow, it takes a lot of those to get to where it's actually supportive of my lifestyle and can support my family, this, that, and the other. And it takes, I feel like I could get there a lot faster by buying commercial real estate, whether it be multifamily or mobile home parks. And so I don't know if that answers your question, but like that's, again, kind of the comparison of the two and why we chose to go the route we did.
Well, and it does. So let me start with that. Let me also kind of back up and drop in here, Kevin, some years, long time ago. Talked to a number of people over the years about mobile home parks and investing in them. And the mobile homes oftentimes are like little money boxes. They're easier to maintain if you're going to own them. But if you have a park, most times you don't own them, at least not all of them. So you're not necessarily heavily engrossed, engaged in the maintenance and repair business, but you're still benefiting from people need a space to put them. If you have a space that's ideal, location that's ideal, then in turn you get paid for the space and your minimum, your upkeep is fairly minimal. You may be cutting some grass, depending upon if you got any amenities or anything in the area, that is your maintenance and your upkeep. And you don't have a tremendous amount of expenses outside of that. Mm-hmm. But definitely helps in order to structure and make the deal work. So, Kevin, look, you have touched on a lot. And I want to make sure that our listeners, because you wrote a book. I mean, there's all kind of, you're a plethora, man, of information. And you have a wealth of information to share. So how can our listeners get in contact with you? Where can they reach you to find out more?
Yeah, that's great. I appreciate that, Kerwin. So if you want to learn what we've got going on a company level, you know, kind of the assets we're buying on our website, investwithsunrise.com, you can see case studies of deals that we've historically done. You can see what we're working on today. We've got webinars up there and just a ton of different videos that will give you some insights as to like, what is our business model? Why do we do what we do? Why do we love parking lots and mobile home parks? And so again, investwithsunrise.com. If you want to learn what I've got going on, listen to my podcast. I've got two different podcasts. One that I still host now, I've been doing about 10 years, called Real Estate Investing for Cash Flow. It's a commercial real estate investing podcast. And then I've got another podcast, which I did about 130 episodes of, called the Mobile Home Park Investing Podcast. Both those. While I don't do the Mobile Home Park show anymore, it's still relevant information. It's all applicable. You can go over to kevinbupp.com and you'll get access to both those podcasts. You can also find them on iTunes and Stitcher and all the other places that you know people listen to podcasts.
Awesome. Kevin, I greatly appreciate that. We have kind of blown through our time today. And I mean, because my man, look, you are, I love it because I can see so many different conversations to have. So we're going to have to schedule you and get you back on the show so we can continue this conversation so we can get more information out to people. I guess just in a nutshell, you have the experience that our audience, I mean, to be blunt, they could benefit from. You know, you've migrated, but I want to touch on one more thing. And then I have a question for you after that. You spoke about the rebuild and I tell people, because I picked this up over the years, gleaned that the average millionaire goes broke three times. And the thing about rebuilding is oftentimes, you know how you got where you were. You laid out this, you basically cut your course to get to where you are. So if you ever have to reset, you automatically know what to do to get back to where you were and you know where you went wrong. So then you know, okay, well, I need to take a different direction than what I was taking before. At what point? That is the neat thing about entrepreneurship and things that people do not realize. Well, it's not necessarily that you endeavor to quote unquote fail, but you're not failing. All you're doing is learning yourself forward and working towards success. So thank you for sharing that. So the question I have for you, Kevin, and I call this our mic drop question. It is, if you could share with our listeners that thing that if you would have known this, like way, 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 way back day one, that would have accelerated your success, what would that be?
Yeah, that is a great question. There's probably a number of different answers I could give you because there's a lot of things I've learned and have reflected back on. But, you know, I think as it relates to, and I'm going to be only, maybe not speaking to the entire audience, but there's probably a few out there that maybe want to truly replace an income by investing in real estate. I would say that don't be scared of larger assets. Don't be scared of larger properties. If you own a few single family rentals, or if that's the kind of game you've been playing, maybe look at buying an apartment complex, smaller or medium sized apartment complex, or even other types of commercial real estate, whether it be self storage or mobile home parks. Again, the list goes on and on. There's a million ways to make money in real estate. But I would say that what I found is that most people think it's more difficult to get financing on larger assets, but it's actually quite the opposite. Most of the time, when you're buying a single family rental, they're going to be looking at your W-2 income, and they're going to be kind of using that to make a decision based on whether or not they're going to give you a loan, even if it's a rental property. A lot of times they still take that into the equation, whereas that is not the case with larger commercial real estate. So they're looking at the real estate as a business, because that's what it is. And it makes it a lot easier to get better debt options and financing on larger cash flowing assets than it does on small single family rental properties. So again, I would have gone bigger. Simple answer, I would have gone bigger. I would have looked at bigger assets and just opened up my mind to playing a bigger game sooner rather than later.
Wow. Go big or go home.
That's it.
I love it.
Well, even when you get a lot of that bigger stuff, you know, the options start opening up to non-recourse loans, right? Like the 90% of the loans that we have in our books today are non-recourse. We do have a few recourse, but they're non-recourse, meaning that if shit ever were to hit the fan, excuse my language, but if it were ever to go the way we did not intend it to go, we wouldn't be risking our own personal residence, and they wouldn't be coming after my house and my cars personally if something went wrong with the deal. And then sometimes things happen. A pro forma is just that. I can promise you one thing, it will never be exactly what's set forth in the pro forma. Either outperform or underperform the pro forma. So I'll leave it at that. Bigger deals are a lot easier to take down and a lot more options available for creative financing and just better debt terms overall.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for that. Thank you so much, Kevin, for, again, taking time out of your busy schedule to be here on the show with us. I really appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. I want to say thank you again to you, Sunrise Capital Investors, for taking the time today.
Corwin, thanks for having me, buddy. It's been a lot of fun, and thank you for doing what you do. It's how much work goes behind this, so thank you for spreading the word.
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome. So listeners, guys, look, y'all got a wealth of information today. We told you to take notes. Hopefully you did. Hopefully you wrote fast, because we were kind of whizzing through this today for sure. But I want you to take the notes. I want you to break them down, and I want you to take action or create action steps from them that you can then work to implement. First things first, research, reach out to Kevin, reach out to his team, and start getting more information on how you can learn how to be a part of these types of investments. There's a wealth of opportunity out here, guys, and we got to capitalize on it. For our listeners, one more time, for the final time, y'all know what I do. Y'all know how I do it. Y'all know what I say. Y'all know I always put all that stuff together, and I tell it to you this way, which is, I love you, I love you, I love you. And we're going to see you guys out there in those streets.
Guys, that was a great show today. And we thank you so much for taking the time to listen to Exit Strategies Radio Show. My name is Corwin J. Millette. Yes, that is me. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart for tuning in for today's episode. Exit Strategies is my baby. It is how I give back to our community. It is how I foster goodwill, spread good news, and trustfully help you get great results. Guys, as I always say to you, I love you, I love you, I love you. And we're going to see you guys out there in the streets.